Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, August 12th, 2002. Tonight we have a village forum titled A Visit to the Local Organic Farms That Supply Some of Holden's Food. The tape number is FO2002-36. Let's listen in.
To answer any questions that you have about the food philosophy, the food buying practices of Holden, kind of what we're about when we make food here and when we plan to cook for 450 people sometimes in the summer. And we're going through some changes in the past couple of years and going through changes even now in terms of thinking about stuff we want to do differently in the future. So we're kind of open to your questions about that, but I'll let all of us introduce ourselves first.
I'm Christian Benson, and I'm Cervillo's the other food service coordinator.
What? We can't hear you.
I'm Christian, and I serve the village as the other food service coordinator.
The other food service.
Yeah.
I'm Jeremy, and I'm the plumber.
Jeremy, you want to talk to us a little bit about why you're here and why you have interest? Because I think it's kind of cool.
I've become very interested in the food sourcing issue over the last year. Where we get our food from locally, if it's shipped thousands of miles before it gets here, how it's grown, and some of the things that... So I personally think that some of the more radical things that Holden is doing right now is involving food sourcing. Yeah, so it's a pretty exciting and interesting time. It's also changed my perspective on how I think I have to live after I leave here. So it continues to play an important role in my life and will for a long time.
And we just recently, these two actually went and visited the local farms where we get a lot of our produce and some organic meats from. So I think ideally we're going to have a video sometime down the line of that visit so people can see, maybe part of the orientation video, of where we actually get all our products from.
Is this farm big enough to grow that much produce?
Well, it's a bunch of different farms actually. Okay. Mostly local. Out in Twisp area and Leavenworth, and we get some produce down from Chelan and up at 25 Mile Creek, which is just right up behind the B&B.
Yeah. What about winter?
Wintertime cuts back a lot. We can get potatoes and squash and apples that have obviously been in storage, but wintertime is pretty light because we're on the same season as everyone else locally. So there's not a whole lot of produce except what we can stock up in the fall and keep in either the coolers, or we have lockers that stay semi-cold. They're not cold storage by any means, but they'll keep potatoes for a couple months.
Sure, but you have like 60 or 70 people here.
Yeah.
Oh, sure, it's quite a bit. Though there are times when there's a lot. There are times when there's a lot of people as well in holiday seasons. So.
And there's certainly. I mean, we're not trying to imply that we don't. We're not. We're still very dependent on some of the large, kind of Cisco and FSA to a lesser degree, and still get. In the summer, good half of our food from them, but it's more like half than like all, which is pretty cool. But certainly in the winter we have more of a dependence, and there's a less of an ability to get local produce. I think some of those questions we're trying to address, kind of as food source coordination and in the food source committees. So how then would we want to eat differently here in the winter? And one of the kind of little, but actually not so little, I think, kind of awesome ways that there's a food service coordinator who's been here for 2 years and she's leaving town in the next couple of weeks. And she's going to go to the Twisp area to one of the farms that we get some food from, Sunny Pine Farm. And she's going to do a little bit of canning for us.
Pickles.
Both of these guys actually are going to go and visit and probably help out during that time that she's there. And we have no idea. It's a great experiment. How much is she going to be able to get done? And how much will it really affect us? Maybe it'll affect us enough that it'll, you know, change us for a month, you know, and that's pretty incredible. If she and the people that are going to help her out would be able to, you know, affect what we can serve here, you know, canned tomatoes, so that we're not getting the, you know, what most of the canned tomatoes that you can get from someplace like Sysco are now pretty much guaranteed to be genetically engineered, and you know, and they're wrong. I mean, it's wrong to have, you know, I have a lot of problems with even serving a lot of that stuff in the winter, but so we're trying to wrestle with it, but we're still very dependent, and you know, have to be thankful for that.
We get a lot of apples locally, and so that's a very nice source through a pretty decent amount of the winter. But one of the other issues is, you know, we have the long history of having bananas and oranges up here, and is that something that we have to think about deciding to get rid of, or do we have to, how do we deal with those issues, that there's bananas that come from who knows where half the time, and under what conditions are they produced, and do we have the right to eat those, I think is what the question comes down to, and can we change our mindset to get around to doing something, like avoiding fruits that aren't in season or even remotely grown locally, and...
Well, you can get oranges not too far away.
Yeah, oranges aren't too bad sometimes, but there's only a certain season that they come from too, so... Mm-hmm.
I think the emphasis that Holden has changed somewhat. I think we all would like to be eating organic food, period. I mean, that would be a great, great thing, but the emphasis is kind of on looking locally, looking to meet the direct person who grew whatever it is we're purchasing. Organic would be great, but that's also a big bonus too, by dealing directly with the farmers.
A lot of it has to do with the relationship aspect of knowing the people that grow your food, and there's some great things that Holden can offer to all these, there's a lot of small farmers that are really trying pretty radical things, trying to start farms that are small scale instead of these massive complexes, and doing things in a sustainable kind of way, where their normal market is to, you know, pack up 3 or 4 times a week and go down to a little parking lot in some small town and hope they can sell out whatever they can. We have a place where we can say, hey, like with Grant's Farm in Leavenworth with Sunny Pines as well, we can say, give us what you got, and they can grow what we ask for to begin with. They can plant it, they can grow it, and they can distribute it to us. So it gives them a real solid foundation for their future as well.
Saves gas too,
naturally. Yes,
exactly. Have you tried growing things here, or is it just too dry?
It's a pretty harsh growing season here. We actually have a pretty awesome area head for lawns and gardens this summer, and she's been experimenting with a lot of greens. That she's also, we sprout here, and that can be done inside. She's been getting into doing sprouting, but in the gardens, she's been producing kind of quite a variety of greens, and I was excited because we had enough to make kind of a big salad of all of these, this mess of greens that were all grown here. And you know, enough so that, you know, probably a few hundred people were able to have some of those greens on a sandwich bar day a few weeks ago. So we grow a little, but certainly, we definitely have to start from the bottom line that Holden is not a sustainable community. Like, we are dependent on the outside world, you know, on Down Lake and on the transportation that brings it here. So it's nice when we can do some stuff here. We have herb gardens, and we have, you know, we can do what we can, but we don't have a big window of opportunity here.
Yeah. It sounds like you guys have a great relationship with those farmers out there. That's really awesome, and that they can they must be so thankful that I do that they can just distribute these large quantities of stuff on and not have to divvy up so many people. Because then their stuff doesn't go bad. Mm-hmm. And does it ever happen that they all have the same stuff and all of a sudden you've got like, you know, 5 bushels of apricots from 3 different farmers?
Really, in the summer, it's not an issue.
That you can
we
take
go
it all.
Through so much food in the summer. Like, we, I mean, it's just, we could really take huge amount. I mean, the kind of the scale farmers that we are dealing with, they just couldn't give us too
much. So, like, are you guys their only, like,
no,
provision?
No, not at all.
They still, like, have enough.
They still, I mean, and we could take more from some of these farms. Mm-hmm. Sunny Pine gives us a fair amount, but Grant Gibbs gives us just some of his produce, and there's a guy, Jeff Berman, at 25 Mile Creek, just up from B&B. He doesn't even really have a farm, he's kind of a homestead and does pretty amazing, massive gardening and has an orchard there. And he, you know, gives us fruit once a week, but I mean, we could use it and, you know, 3 or 4, 5 times as much. So it's really, it wouldn't be an issue just in terms of how much.
So when you as the food staff coordinators and Holden as like, I don't know, philosophical entity were deciding to go more and eat more local, was it a big debate? Was there lots of like financial concerns or how do we do this concerns? Like, were you guys there? Was that, is it a pretty recent development, or like have they been always been eating locally?
A lot of it has changed really dramatically in Chrissy's, the former food service coordinator time period. Mm-hmm. They had some dialogues starting, well, roughly 2 years ago now, the winter, I think, before 2 years ago. And that their food policy shift came, this is from what I understand as well, the food policy shift came about during those discussions. And Chrissy really is, you know, not single-handedly responsible because she has a lot of backing from business manager and Molly and people that are interested financially in doing it as well. But she really kind of did things, she's kind of given the ball to roll with, and then before everybody knew it, she had gotten this huge thing kind of started up. And it's amazing what she's done, actually. So
that's great.
But I don't really know how heated the arguments were for it.
There's some good setup here. Tori Karpenko, who is right now the farm manager at Sunny Pine, was here on Lawns and Gardens staff for a year. He was on long-term community. So he was kind of part of prepping the village to, you know, to support local and organic farmers. And then he hooked himself up and was, you know, after he left here, became the farm manager at this farm in Twist. And there was the beginning of this great relationship. He knew about Holden. He knew about how weird it is to send food up here and like all of the crazy, you know, no, we don't have a phone, no this, that, like. So there was a relationship there that helped out. And some of the farm connections have been, like Grant Gibbs was hiking through here and found us and kind of made the connection. A lot of these farmers know each other, so that there's a, but Chrissy has been huge in terms of kind of grabbing hold of those connections and starting a relationship. And I think it really is hugely about those relationships that have formed. And she got the bright idea of inviting these folks up for a harvest festival last fall. And we just sent out the invitations to invite them and other folks up for the annual Harvest Festival. You know, we want to make this an event. And we've gotten a couple of letters back from some of the farmers. We're so excited to come up to Holden, and it's wonderful. And you realize that, like, in just such a short amount of time, there's been this relationship that's developed, and hopefully it's a relationship that will then be able to carry past Chrissy, who's leaving now, and Christian and I, who are coming in, and that when, you know, Tori leaves that farm and goes off and continues this life, that we'll still have these connections that will kind of rise above the individual people, you know.
How swift was the change of it? Was it pretty gradual, or?
It's been gradual, but a lot has happened in the last 2 years.
say that's pretty much when Chris and really started the outreach thing, get in touch with bonders.
Okay. I don't, these are kind of not exactly right figures, but it seems to me around about 25% of the food was local last summer, and this summer it's moved up to about 50%. And that, as I've heard before, I don't really know about the budgetary things all that much, but that is kind of the limit of where we can do the budget as it stands now, the way we have broken down. And so at some point, and I think this winter is going to be an opportunity for it, we're going to have a lot of dialogue about, well, do we need to change the way we look at the budget for the kitchen in order to do this further and see if we can get 100% local money going. And there's all these snags in it, because it's still an ongoing process. Like you say 50%, but you know that's not really true all the time. Like there's in the pork that we had, one of the big goals for the summer was to have all local meat, locally produced meat. And this last Sunday we had to have Cisco pork in because there's like little connections that don't always get made or something happens here or there. And
we
so,
don't want to be pig farming with
I'm curious about that. I grew up on a big hog farm. Like what constitutes organic meat? How do you work with that?
Yeah, that's definitely a tricky one.
People would sort of like, the kind of basic strictures around organic meat is that going into the raising of this animal, that you're raising this animal, all that that animal is eating is organic feed.
Okay. Now, so, without medications added.
And without hormonal,
right.
Like, you know,
it's a pig fed normal stuff.
Yeah, but not, I mean, so much of, like, if you think of the vast amount of country that's, you know, kind of feed, that's, that grows feed for cattle and for pigs. That's, so, and I think, I mean, you think about, like, the huge hog farms, like, we've got a pig.
It's a pig.
At Grant's. He's one of, like, we were down there, Jeremy and I, at visiting his farm, and he was just saying in passing, like, well, I'm gonna go and pick up some pigs for my pig tractor, because he fertilizes the fields that lay fallow with these pigs. And Chrissy was like, well, you wanna pick us up a pig? And we'll, you know, well, it won't be ready till, you know, winter. Sure, we can eat it in the winter. You can send it to us then. So, and then Jeremy went and saw his farm live.
Three little pigs and one little black one is ours. the tractor actually is an amazing thing too. The Grant's farm is one of the most amazing things in the world. The way he has everything set up and connected. But just a very basic example is his pig tractor. He's got a basic little pen, and he puts it in his fields when he's gotten rid of all the things that he can take out of the field, all the stalks, the weeds, whatever are still sticking up. Puts the pigs in the little tractor, leaves them in one place for a day or two. They root around everything. They just turn up all the soil, eat everything there is. He takes the box and moves it down a little bit. He just consistently does this. So he feeds those pigs solely on the stuff that he would never have any use for. And weeds and other things, leftover food and leftover vegetables and stuff from his farm as well. So he's completely using the animal being with the animal in a relationship and then harvesting it at the end. It's pretty fantastic. It's the same thing with his cows, all his manure. He has all of his own manure from his cows over the winter, fertilizes fields, nothing else.
His
chickens, they do the same thing.
Yeah, it was actually, he set up a note at one point, you know, can't send the chickens. The chickens will be a few weeks late because they're still fertilizing the cherry trees.
Yeah.
You know, like, how great. Mm-hmm. How great is that?
Where do you get your milk and other dairy stuff
from? Milk right now we're buying from Cisco. We've been trying to buy organic milk, and the cost difference is pretty huge. We'd also like to look for local organic milk, but that hasn't been found as of yet. There's a lot of regulations with that too, and it costs farmers quite a bit, just as with meat, to be able to butcher and to be able to milk cows and serve organic milk. There's a lot of government regulations on that.
In my experience, organic milk is twice as much. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just from the next county. So
in kind of the middle of last winter, we started buying exclusively organic milk and pretty much kept up organic milk for the winter community. That was possible for the winter community. First of all, because we're ordering milk in small enough quantities, like we couldn't actually order enough milk for the summer community, whether it's organic or not organic milk. Like we need to mix milk because we don't have the storage space for milk for the amount that we drink. But there are some people that then have questions of should the winter community and should the summer community be, should there be two different sets of kind of criteria for decision? But certainly there were a lot of people that supported the organic milk this winter, this past winter, and would support it again this winter. Kind of see, you know, we've gotten some evaluations where people say, you know, I would pay more if we, you know, if you could bring this milk in or if you could bring this food in.
Dairy is one of the hardest ones. Cheese is really hard. And, I mean, ice cream. How much ice cream do we go through up here? And, all of that is simply mass-produced ice cream.
If we gave up ice cream, we could go 100% organic.
Ice cream is God.
It's a little scary, yeah.
But that's, I mean, that's, we joke about this stuff, but there's some truth, there's some kind of serious question involved in that. How truthful are we being about the whole situation? How honest are we being about exploring where we get our food from, what it means to be alive and eating food on this planet if we have a certain amount of this produce locally for dinner and a certain amount of meat, and then everybody and their brother goes down and gets three huge scoops of ice cream that defeats all the purpose in some ways. And so,
Or does it? You don't want to be so doctrinaire that you turn people off. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, and I think that's
a lot of people come from different places, yeah, mm-hmm, and in their heads.
Certainly.
That's a huge question. And certainly that I have kind of a huge, I have some strong opinions about this, but my desire as the food service, as in food service coordination here, is to start a lot of discussions, because I by no means think that I have the right answers or any answers to this. And I really do feel like it's something that needs to be talked about, you know, with people like you who come here on a Monday night to a forum, or people who decide to stay in this community for long periods of time, and to discuss it and really talk out those issues and have it be a decision that a community can take ownership of, and not a guilt-ridden, you know, a sense that starts out with we're doing something so wrong, or you need to change this, or you need to change that, because ultimately I don't think that that changes what people feel about this stuff. Like I really want these discussions to happen so that people, on their own terms and in their own ways, kind of decide what is best for them. Mm-hmm.
Well, at the very least, you could get them thinking about what they're doing at home.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there are lots of small farmers who need to be supported. Mm-hmm. True. And everybody's into farmers markets now. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they're all over the place, thank goodness. Remember when they started? You probably are too young. Mm-hmm. But, but it hasn't been all that long.
What about coffee? Do you get, I forgot, several churches around Seattle.
Fair trade
coffee.
The coffee we have right now is shade grown, I believe,
yeah,
at Fair Trade.
Organic coffee.
We've had the same vendor for probably 9 years now. Cafe Mom is the brand name. They're out of Portland, but then they're out of somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Royal Blue Organics is what we get it from.
Because several of the churches around Seattle that have been brought up, and then a number of churches that I've been have gone to into bar into the great coffee world.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of issues around coffee, and a lot of people think you just shouldn't drink coffee, period. There's I've heard, like, every argument, and I, who am I to say? I drink a lot of coffee. I don't admit it, you know, but yeah, there was a big debate in Poland years ago, and a lot of research done, so we haven't overturned, like, we haven't uprooted that yet. We hope that it's good for now.
And I think the other question would have been your different spices and herbs. Are you able to get them at specific farms?
We can get pretty much your basic herbs that would grow at any farm would be basil, cilantro, parsley. That's just locally grown stuff. Chilies and things like that. But we have not gone organic with the majority of our spices. Again, for the quantity that we use in the summertime, it's not so cost efficient. We'd rather put the money somewhere else at this point. But that's another something that could change down the line. Financially, right now, with 50% of our food basically being organic or locally grown, the budget doesn't change that much because we kind of looked and took away some other things. And that's kind of what will have to happen if we want to go further. We have to, again, weigh the banana issue, weigh not necessarily ice cream, but just other things, you know, and see, well, let's get rid of this and we'll try this out.
And one more question. I worked in restaurants when I went to college, and one of the things that's being a chef before in a restaurant was cost control. And does that play a big role in this of your changeover, or affected as much?
Not really at this point. It will down the line again if we want to go farther or switch to all organic meat for actually do it this winter and then hopefully have it running into the summertime. It could affect it a little bit, but it's not really a big worry of ours. We feel like everyone supports us so much.
Mm-hmm.
They'd all like to see this happen. So it's been beneficial to everyone, I think. And just, again, talking more about different issues it brings up. A lot of people are really stuck with macaroni and cheese that they grew up with, and, you know, ramen noodles and stuff, having stuff like that around the village. And I don't know if that will change. But
well, I hope you guys do go further. I think hopefully things will change in the long run. There's a lot of people, there's a lot of small farmers all over the country that are just looking for some alternative type of agriculture. I'm one of them. I mean, I grew up on a small family farm in northern Iowa. And between my dad and his cousin, we farmed about 1,200 acres, and they can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
Both my mom and my dad, and we all have night jobs, and then they farm during the day. So they're just looking for different ways, looking for new markets, different types of things. And so even like these age-old farmers that only know how to do mega agriculture, pesticides, herbicides.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we farm all around it ready stuff, which is hard to think of, but that's what they have to do so they can work the night jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So like people, like I have an opportunity, and there's a lot of young people especially going to schools at Iowa State and Madison that are trying to learn how to do this, to do some more sustainable or organic farming. Which of course is bringing all kinds of debates about like what's organic and
mm-hmm.
what we find, but it's really a fascinating time to be interested in agriculture because there's new stuff happening. So hopefully, as like some more farmers get into this, maybe the village can be more supplied.
Mm-hmm.
It may take a while, but
I've been totally just kind of awakening to the fact that so few people of kind of the younger generations of this country know about this much, about where their food comes from and about agricultural practices. Me included, when I grew up in New York City and Philadelphia, and I didn't know anything about where my food came from. I didn't think about it because I lived in a city, you know, and
And my parents didn't talk about it, and I didn't learn anything in schools. And I'm kind of new, and I feel like a few generations back, we were enough tied to farmers in this country. We were so much more of a farm-based society, you know, just even 100 years ago, that everybody knew a lot more than I knew, you know, when I was 10, or probably a lot more than I know at 25 right now. But it's like my new realization of, my goodness, why don't we learn these things? Why don't they teach these things in the schools? You know, why don't, but I think in terms of Holden, like, it's so important. I mean, tell that to people, write that on evaluations, like, because that stuff will get listened to. And as these discussions happen where we say, well, one of the things that Chrissy's going to try to do before she actually leaves is really do some evaluation of, okay, if we really changed this and this and this, you know, got organic oils, changed, really tried to make all of our food local or organic or both, what would this involve in terms of our budget for food, and are we willing to commit to that? And doing a little bit of research, and I think that those are going to be the debates that are going to happen, probably not just in the next year, but over the next 5 years in this place. And, you know, any sorts of questions or thoughts that you all have, I think will really be listened to.
One of the biggest things that I think will be happening in the next few years, just in general, is the idea of how simple it is to get the foods that we get before. Like, for us, it's really easy to order everything from Sysco. It takes no effort at all. You know, you get a big catalog, go down, check what you need, comes in pretty much always on time. You know, it's there, it's guaranteed. Same thing when you're out in the world and you go into a huge supermarket and pick whatever you pretty much your heart's desire is on the shelf anywhere. And at some point, I hope people will start thinking a little bit more about what that means to the rest of the way we live and to the rest of the way other people live. And I think it comes about. It's just a matter of making people aware of it. And I think this place, Holden, has a great opportunity to touch a lot of people in that way and make a difference. So
yeah, it's a huge outreach. I think how many people come through the summer.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people that probably have never been hungry yet, also mm-hmm. changing their eating habits mm-hmm. in a big way. It's one big session.
Hopefully that's a good thing.
It's a great thing about our culture. It's interesting to watch happen. And here's a great little sort of microcosm of our culture. And again, this thing of the land of plenty, and you can have whatever you want whenever you want it. Just a little while ago, there was this great peanut butter debacle that happened up here. You know, for a while, it turns out our supplier, we get good peanut butter from, their manufacturer peanut butter was cleaning their storerooms. So for a little while, we couldn't get peanut butter, and we couldn't get it up here, so we ran out of peanut butter. And that became kind of, to some people, it was a life and death kind of matter. It was amazing that there was nothing else to eat in the village besides peanut butter. Like, you couldn't do it, basically. And it caused a lot of real problems. And just to see that happen is incredible. Then hopefully we can all step back from it just like, and be like, whoa, what's that all about?
For the kids who won't eat vegetables.
Yeah, exactly. So that kind of stuff is very important, I think. The more that can happen, the better in some ways.
Who does up the menus, and like, how do you determine what gets used, or like how?
The cooks who work here actually make up work on the menus, and some of it you've seen around for years if you've been to Holden. Things like egg caca and stuff like that are probably going to go. But we try to come up with new things to use all the organic produce that we're getting. That does make it a little tricky. Usually we would set up like a 4 to 5 week rotation of menus that we go through, but when you're working with organic produce and you're writing to a farmer and just saying literally in a handwritten note, send us everything you got,
right,
you don't know exactly what that means,
right.
So that's kind of changed the, I think it's changed the training of cooks up here too. A lot of people who come up here don't have previous cooking experience, and it's one thing to follow a recipe, but it's another thing to know when you're just getting stuff in that day.
Yeah.
Oh, why don't I use this stuff? Because it's not going to get used later on. I think that's the worst case scenario. We don't want to see this great produce come in and then not being used because of our menu was based on the Cisco order.
And this week, I mean, stuff where we have to adjust, like we were expecting, we were hoping for a lot of lettuce. We've been getting most of our lettuce for maybe the past month from Sunny Pines. So it's all been lots of different kinds of organic lettuce. Well, their lettuce was eaten by deer in the past week, so they don't really have much more. So this past Friday, we didn't get all the lettuce that we thought that we'd get. So we've got to play with that now. And, you know, somebody, it was, you know, Adam came in, one of the cooks came in to me and said, so do we have lettuce? I said, no, we don't actually have this. And he's like, okay, well, you know, time to get creative.
Yeah.
And there's, I think that's actually great. That's a wonderful attitude. And I feel like that's really what I know both Kristen and I care a lot about cooking. I mean, we both love it. And I think both of us would say, you gotta learn how to, you know, cook with what you have. But that's a hard thing that takes some people, kind of, you know, a while to learn how to, especially if you don't know what really anything is when you're coming into a kitchen, and especially an institutional kitchen, and all of a sudden you're expected to cook for hundreds of people. So I think that the cooks are doing an amazing job rising to some of the challenges.
Are they full-time staff or?
They're all long-term staff. Most of them.
What's your biggest challenge? Coordinating all the food.
Oh, I think I'm learning that right now. I'm just actually being trained in on the ordering, and I actually lived up here before when we did just order from Cisco, and it was easier, a lot easier. I think the challenge is keeping the communication open. We have to communicate. We don't have phones, obviously, so you have to communicate through pouch notes and through letters and. That's one of the biggest challenges. You don't always know what you're going to get. Or organic beef, we expected that today, and our shipment of it didn't exactly work out. But it ended up here, with the guy who grew it. He just brought it all the way up just because the coolers weren't down where they should have been, so he could have transferred it. So that's the kind of thing. It's just like the communication. It's great that he just came up. I wouldn't have expected that of him, but his other option would have been to just turn around because he didn't have coolers to ship the meat up in. So I think it's just communicating with more people other than just one.
Kristen's right now having the responsibility of, instead of writing out orders to Cisco every week, he deals with, you know, we have a list between the two of us, a list of 15 to 20 distributors or farmers or so. Yeah, it's a lot more work, and it's exciting for me. Like I tend to check in food on Fridays, and we get food from about three different places on Fridays, and we've been getting for the past 3 or 4 weeks these huge coolers of pints and pints of raspberries and fresh basil and cilantro, and I bring them up and I'm so excited. I'm like, all of this fresh basil, and I just, because I care about good food, I love good food, and so that makes it a fun thing for me. But it's also, it's a lot more work, and it's a lot of work for Kristen to do a lot of that ordering and keep track of that all. So,
and you have to have staples on hand besides. Mm-hmm. When you don't get enough stuff, you've got so many people to feed.
Yeah. And that's another huge process we're going through right now, is actually we get food up by barge. Mm-hmm. we get food daily on the boat, not daily, but three times a week. But we do have to buy staples like that, organic flour, tons and tons of things. And that's another thing that we're going through right now is we actually figure out which is more cost effective. This is kind of a time where we are going to be buying a lot of staples, and we'll be looking at is it cheaper to just go without the shorting this winter and just use oil. That was my big thought of the day today. You know, let's drop shorting. We use it for baking bread and things, and basically use olive oil here and canola oil and shorting. And the shorting is organic, but the olive oil and the canola oil aren't. Well, what if we dropped the shorting and figured out how to work without it and just switched to organic olive oil and oil? So, you know.
That could be tough. You gotta get some new recipes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Baking with oil is quite different.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the challenges for me too is but the communication, and it's kind of a few different lengths. The food that we eat here is pretty normal to me. That's kind of normally what I've cooked and what I've eaten for a long time. And what I care a lot about is effectively teaching people about how to cook well with vegetables and with the kind of foods that we cook with here. Like, how do you make good food with that? And we certainly, I mean, it's one thing when you have a group of lead cooks, but we also have, you know, a ton of kitchen staff that come in, and it's awesome because all of them get to cook, hopefully, at some point. But, you know, it means that you have kind of a wide range of experience that goes into that. And I really hope to kind of train and inspire people to also learn how to cook well with stuff. And I kind of feel like in the end, in terms of changing a community attitude, it really has to be, they have to see that the ingredients or the food that we're eating is good, you know? That's what's gonna change things. People aren't gonna decide to change something because they're told something is better for them. It's gonna be, gosh, we just got these tomatoes from Sunny Pine, and I ate this tomato and I thought, why would I ever eat a tomato that wasn't? I mean, it was just like such a new level, and I felt like, God, if everybody had this experience, their minds and their hearts wouldn't be changed, you know, because it's just a different experience. But I don't know. That's a challenge for me. I don't really know what that challenge is exactly, but I care a lot about this. I want to be able to teach it well, though. And,
well, short of having the people out there picking the produce and then taking it inside and cooking it themselves, it's hard to have people see the connection. Unless the food that you do put together is really, really tasty, and then you tell them afterwards. The recipes make a difference.
Just the apples were a great example last year, where there was this time period we started giving up all these great local apples, and instead of like the green apples we have up there, which are mass produced, they're not all shiny and uniform and the same looking thing. And you get one, you get a bucket full of these weird looking apples with bumps on them, and shapes, and something on the side maybe. And then you eat one, you realize it's delicious. And then it's great to watch the expressions change, because people first come to the mold and like, ooh, apples again, these kind of great. But then if you see them have one of them and realize how individual and delicious that apple is, those bumps kind of disappear. They become a signifier for what is good food, as opposed to a signifier for what's wrong with the food.
I actually kind of thought that coming in. Like, I thought, I might know a lot of this food's going to be organically grown. I thought, it's probably not going to be so good, but that's not for me. I don't care. I'd rather eat the organic stuff. And then we had those, like, the plums and apricots in it.
Yeah.
Those were good. Yeah. It was like the best ones I've ever had in my life. Mm-hmm. I can't believe they're organically grown. It was just awesome. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us something anything about Cisco?
Cisco. Sure, yeah, they're nationwide.
General Motors of food or something.
Well, yeah, Cisco and FSA pretty much own institutional, not to call us an institution, but institutional food buying. They do the majority of another big one is Farmer Brothers, so we might be familiar. And we've worked with them ever since, as long as I've been here. We have a great relationship with the sales rep there too, but again, he could never tell us where anything was grown, really, or anything like that. I think that's one of the major issues that we have with them. But let's see what else.
So it's like a huge corporation?
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's nationwide, huge corporation. They'll distribute food anywhere.
Distribution.
Yeah, they're out in Wenatchee, and the other one on Western Washington is in Kent, so they're all...
They do kind of crazy things, like Washington apples that we get, for instance, will oftentimes be grown and packaged in somewhere in Washington. Like I said, they can't actually trace their food back. Usually they don't really know for sure which farm it came from, because they have so many different suppliers that all get dumped into one place and then packaged up. But they'll do Washington apples. They'll box them up and send them down to California, and then the call will come in for getting apples, and that distributor down in California will send them back up to us in Washington.
So
because they're so big, they can afford to do that, but there's some pretty serious issues with that kind of behavior.
And they'll say Washington apples are on the side of the box. Yeah. You kind of wonder if they are still Washington apples. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I don't know where they went.
Washington apples on a journey.
Yeah. You made the comment earlier in your first remarks that genetically modified food, you wouldn't want to eat that. Why?
I know that I eat a lot of it because I know that a lot of the food that is grown right now is genetically modified or genetically engineered. I think it's a little weird. I think it's strange that in the past, really, 5 to 10 years, a huge amount of change has gone on to play around with gene splicing in food. And I guess it's not so much, like, I don't know necessarily what the biological or physical effects of that food and that changed food is going to have on people. Although I seriously think that there probably are some that haven't been figured out because all of these foods went on the market, just were allowed on the market without a whole lot of long-term testing at all. What makes me worry is that people, big corporations, and about 5 corporations in this world now, are gaining ownership of the seeds of this, you know, of the seeds to grow anything, and that farmers who are using these seeds to grow these genetically modified foods, the way that those seeds are created now, they will not reproduce themselves. So the farmers then have to go back to the distributor and are at the mercy of these distributors who own, who have that power.
They have patents
on these seeds, and that the way that these seeds are being created now, it is like making these other seeds non-existent anymore. Like, you have to find seeds that aren't this way, you know, that haven't been changed. And I feel like anything that leads to or is connected with, you know, a kind of mass corporate power taking ownership of the food production of not just this country, but this world, makes me really uneasy. I don't think that that is okay. And I don't think, it seems like all of the power on every, and these, and corporations like Monsanto and all of, have often, you know, the ownership of not just the seeds, but kind of every step on the level of production, you know, so that, I mean, farmers are, and they're probably, you could speak a lot more articulately than I'm speaking right now about this, but I just, as somebody who isn't a farmer, somebody who's just kind of learning about all of this and trying to figure out what I think about it, when I feel like small farmers are, have less and less power and less ability to make these decisions, and that makes me very uneasy. So that's some of the reasons why I'm uneasy.
Some of the reasons also are sustainability is one that's mentioned in the seeds being produced. But it's a farm like Grant's Farm, for instance, can be itself and stay by itself almost always and never really take inputs from other places. And so just by its very nature, it's better because it exists alone in its own biosphere. But the other thing is that it also is about, you would think that bioengineering could be about broadening diversity, but it's actually the other way around. It's about narrowing choices down, making something really specific. So it
that's one of the
bounty.
Keep these heirloom seeds. Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that even the seed companies like Monsanto and Bayer are scared of, is that there's been such a, and especially pork, hog companies, especially animal companies, is that there's been such a huge loss of species in all this hybridization and genetic engineering that when things come along like erysipelas and hog disease, or blight is the thing that John DeGraff was showing a film about.
Yeah.
Those things are coming back in full force because they become resistant to a lot of our herbicides and pesticides. And those things are coming back big time, and they're really scared. The seed companies are very frightened that they're not going to have the old varieties to fall back on and try to find resistance to. And we can find ourselves up the creek if we lose all this variety. Like, I found it funny that Jeremy said that the pig was black, right? The majority of all pigs grown in the United States are only white now because they've whittled it down from about 75 plus varieties of pigs to about three different kinds that grow well in the confinements. Like our farm, we for the general term of organic, we had organic pork. Say that we probably added some things to the feed, but not very much. Anyway, but so we tried to get some of the new type of pigs because the ones that had always been grown on our farm weren't doing as well. So we thought, we'll get these new pigs that supposedly grow bigger, stronger, because they were the only kinds that the hog buyer would buy. And so we got the new type of pigs, but they did not survive like in the Iowa environment in the way that we grew them. Like, they couldn't be outside in the elements they had to be fondled and cared for. And it was really, it was just horrendous. And so it was just different genetics will do different stuff, same with seeds and animals.
There's also the way it affects the whole biosphere, insect populations. If you genetically organize something so that it kills or will fight off a certain type of insect population, that can have ramifications down the system, just as we are finding out and have found out for a while about pesticides and their production. A lot of it comes down to that we just don't really know, and it's become the norm to have it as opposed to not. And it's not really, and European countries debate this quite a bit. It's a pretty big issue for them. And in the United States, it's really not even, we don't even really talk about it very much. We pretty much just go into this. It's a big effort for us to get through Congress, because you have to stamp on the package that it's been bioengineered. And because there's so many unknowns about it, the companies don't want that kind of stigmatism. I mean, there's possible that there's great things that could come out of bioengineering as well. But there's so many unknowns, we don't have a clue as to what we're doing. And we're just kind of closing our eyes and hoping for the best in a lot of ways.
Yeah, those five corporations as you're saying, Miriam, don't just control the seeds, which would be bad enough, but all the way through the process and then the distribution as well. So the farmers buy the seed and also have to sell the produce to the same people and they're also marketing. So what they're bioengineering for is to make not the taste of that wonderful organic tomato you just bit into, but to make every single green apple look the same. So that in the supermarket under those neon lights, we all buy them because of what they look like, not because of what they taste.
But you know, there is a movement away from that in this country. More and more people want to buy in the farmers markets. And I live in California, where everything grows wonderfully. Mm-hmm. And it's not hard at all to go to a farmer's market every single day, mm-hmm. a different one.
Yeah.
Right. And people are really interested. Deborah Madison's written the new book, maybe you've seen it, about
Deborah Madison of Greens.
Of Greens,
yeah.
Right. You work vegetarian for cooking for everybody. She's got a new big tome on how to cook from farmer's markets. Lots of good recipes.
I think there
is. The awareness is beginning to happen. Alice Water's been doing it for 25 years.
Got a long way to go, though.
Yeah,
yeah, so
that's California.
There's
a lot of butter.
You know, we drive the country.
Yeah. New grocery stores have bigger aisles with bigger apples and bigger this and all beautifully shined and sticker on every one. It is almost impossible to buy a crate of something that are, you know, maybe
in Mason City, which is like the heart of agriculture.
Right. Everyone is the same size, even watermelons. We used to have a fruit market, and we'd buy the biggest, beautiful watermelons. Well, now they're all, you know, same size, no taste. I haven't had good watermelon, really a good watermelon, all year, not like the fruit market ones. And the same way with peaches. I've talked to people, I won't even buy peaches anymore because they're hard. And
you pick them too early.
Oh, yeah.
Because they wanted to be shipped so far away.
That's
yeah.
The one
that's
shipping. Yeah, they brought
you.
Well, you know, we've gotten spoiled by having all of this stuff available all year round. You don't like the taste of tomatoes that you get from the grocery store. Well, not in January because they don't grow in January, you know. But if you want to have tomatoes all year round, then American consumers do.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I think that's...
Do without it?
That's,
yeah.
You got to change.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what I think.
Yeah,
we have to change. I have
to
change. That's not to like everyone else. Like, that's me totally rethinking my sense of how do I want to eat? How do I want to cook? What does it really mean? Like, I remember I have an obsession with cookbooks, and I have tons. And I remember the first time I got a seasonal cookbook, like, and it was just a kind of a seasonal bread book. And I remember it was a very new idea to me of because, you know, I didn't grow up on a farm because I didn't know anything about anything. And so it's like a very remarkable thing for me to be, oh, this is something I want to change in myself, and how do I want to change this? So
there's a certain amount of time period that has to go by before people can get to the point where they're used to being able to get everything they want whenever they want it. And have the means to do that as well, and then can go past that and think about, well, okay, now I have the means to do this, but can I do this? And so it's just thinking about basic survival instinct, like, where is my food coming from? I gotta go use my limited funds to get whatever I can get.
But you know, American consumers spend only like 10% of our.
And we think that's so great. We're so proud of that.
You know, in the past, it was a much higher percentage per capita.
Sure, there should be.
And in other countries, it's high.
Mm-hmm. I know.
What else should you buy? We have to eat. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much it. I
know people buy stuff.
I know.
They buy stuff. I mean, Target's full of stuff. Just
I buy stuff too.
Keep up the good work. You're on the right
track.
Definitely.